So, obviously we're in a new season as far as our physical surrounds go, but we've believed for a long time that God has really been leading us as a church into a new season, you know, shaking things up, opening up new doors and new pathways. And we think that a new season actually requires a new outlook. Who knows when you say, oh, well, I'm going to change something, or I'm going to do a new thing, and you go and do the same things that you did before, you pretty much get the same result, don't you? You've heard about that. So a new season requires a new outlook, and we think that a new name connects us and takes us into that new season. And there's nothing wrong with the old season that we've been in as a church. There have been some incredible people that have been before us. You guys, so many of you have been so faithful and so part of that season and sacrificed and given and served and stayed loyal and faithful. You're absolutely incredible. There's nothing wrong with that at all. But God is opening another door for us, another corridor, and is creating new paths. And we're going to keep speaking about that. And we needed a name, we felt, that would reach across the generations, would reach across all people, would reach groups from all corners of the world. So sometimes when you think about the names, you know, we can call ourselves, you know, Hobart's new coolest church. And, you know, that sort of meets a certain group of people in a certain location and probably doesn't work. So we needed a name that would reach across generations, all people, all groups, and all corners of the world. A name that can easily make sense wherever we plant new services and expressions, both now and in the future. For example, it's got to work in New Norfolk, and it would need to work in Nepal. So let's just think about, you know, what the future could be, and that's all part of the name. We wanted a name that would potentially work with this community center that we're in the middle of creating here. So it's got to actually have something that works here too. And we simply wanted something that wasn't too corny and wouldn't date. And some of you have liked our previous name, but some of you have told people the name of your church and had some raised eyebrows. So, you know, that's... And you know, it really is hard. Everybody's got their opinions about these things. But we believe that this new name can reach into the future with the confidence that God has begun a work within us, and He will see it through to completion. And we wanted a name that would encapsulate who we are, our core values, and a sense of belonging that is us. And thank you to so many people that contributed ideas with the name. It was really cool. I was getting lots of text messages, and people were emailing them in and all that sort of thing. And I can assure you that we've considered all those names carefully and discussed them at length. So thank you, everybody, for being part of that journey. We really, really value that. And the name that we're believing is the name for us moving forward as a church. And that name is, do we want a drum roll? Visual Media, are you ready? Your church! Hashtag, our church, your church. Your church, our church. But obviously, it's something that, you know, we live in the my generation, don't we? In the I generation. And, you know, Apple have taken that space on better than anybody else. And it's all about me. But, you know, in the kingdom, you know, it's not just all about you. It is about them. It is about us. It is our, it is your, and it reaches out. And that's why we've gone for a name that's like that. We wanted something that people connect to in a community. It says you belong. It says there is a place for everybody. So I know names are one of those things. You know, sometimes they instantly resonate. Sometimes they grow on you. Just come along the journey with that. And we are in for a really exciting future. But, you know, even in the name, you know, you can hear Vision Sunday's coming up really soon. And you can hear, you know, some of the things that are bubbling within us about where the future is and where we're going. And I want this morning to speak about as we get ready for Vision Sunday, about being a big-spirited person. It's one thing next Sunday to stand up here and share vision, and sometimes, you know, we could do it in such a way you think, oh, wow, that's cool. But it's like, you know, can I receive that? Can I be part of that? Can I actually take in where we're going? And if we're honest, sometimes you can actually have somebody stand up and share vision, or you can see a presentation like that, and you can be impressed at one level, but you can think, you know what, I don't know whether I've got the energy or the space to actually receive what is being said. And I want to talk about what it means to have a big spirit where we can actually receive what God is doing. So capacity is a big part of our lives. Has anybody ever said this week, I am so stressed? Last week? And I'm sure you've got stress in your life. In fact, we're very good at adding things that create stress in our life, aren't we? Husbands? Kids? Mortgages? New cars? I could go on. Stress is a normal part of life. It is. If you don't experience some level of stress, I'm not sure where you are living, or if you are living, or what you are taking. Many years ago, when I was in the middle of running a really, really busy auto electrical business, and most days the phone just rang all day, every day, all the time, and at any given point in time, I was supposed to be in about three places at once, you know. You know, I was supposed to be Jesus and God and the Holy Spirit and everybody all rolled in together. And I used to regularly, because we had our business based out at Brighton, and so I would regularly be driving across the Bridgewater Bridge out there, and so often I would be feeling stressed. There'd be somebody on the phone. Oh, you said you're going to be here and you haven't arrived yet, and this other truck's broken down and this is happening, and it's all going on at once. And as I was driving across the Bridgewater Bridge, inevitably there would be people sort of sitting on the causeway part of it. They're fishing. And they did not look stressed. And I would think, I would just like to change my life with yours today. Why am I doing this and you're doing that? Why am I so stressed and you're just sitting there fishing? Can I change places with you? And I would start to think about that. And the reality of the way I was wired, and many of you, is that I could have changed places with them. I could have got up every day with nothing more to do than sit on the causeway of the Bridgewater Bridge and catch some dubious fish. And I'm sure I would have become bored. I would have thought, wow, actually, maybe I'd just like a little bit of stress back. I don't think there is such a thing as a stress-free life. And stress isn't all bad. In fact, if we handle it in the right manner, it's a motivator, and without it, most of us won't achieve the dreams and goals and the things that we carry inside it. But obviously, when stress is handled wrong, it's incredibly destructive. Most of us don't so much have a stress issue, but I think it's more a capacity issue. As we follow a path and a purpose for life, there will be stress. And if we keep running from things that are applying pressure, we might actually find ourselves stepping away from the purpose that God has actually called us to. And sometimes people need to do that for a time or a season. So don't get me wrong, I'm not acknowledging what, you know, things that actually need to happen in our lives. But you know, generally speaking, if we find ourselves just continually running from those things, we actually step away from purpose. And I think the key to increasing our capacity, because, you know, like sometimes what are we asking for? There are times when, you know, we've got little kids. And sometimes, just occasionally, just once in a week, they create stress. And have you ever found yourself praying, if you're a parent, Lord, can you just make my kids behave? Or sleep? All right, I just pray for calm and peace over this house. In fact, I'm going around and I'm declaring it in every room and every bedroom and every cupboard and every space. And yeah, there's some truth in that, but not locking them in the cupboard, Jen. But how many times in the middle of that, or sometime after that, rather than just praying, you know, Lord, just help my kids to behave, or something about your finances or your work, how often have we prayed, Lord, would you increase my capacity so that this stress that's around me is much more manageable and I'm able to handle it. I'm able to handle it. Give me the capacity so that when the kids are stressing me, I don't snap. But I've actually got the capacity in that moment. You see, the key is increasing our capacity and deciding to allow God to work in us. Let's allow God to stretch us before life's pressure snaps us. Let's allow God to stretch us before life's pressure snaps us. Allow God to enlarge your capacity to overcome challenges. Allow God to enlarge your capacity to carry responsibility. Allow God to enlarge your capacity to include new ideas, include new thinking, include new people. A new path that we're going on as a church in this new season means that our capacity has to enlarge. We need God to stretch it so that we include, so that we can include new people, so we can include people that perhaps have values and ideas and things that might challenge our thinking. I'm not talking about changing what we believe, but I'm talking about our attitude that is able to be more inclusive. When we feel stressed to the max, there's no room for people in your world. Jesus actually wants to enlarge you through and in your pressure. The enemy wants you to snap. And Paul was addressing the Corinthians. And these guys had taken on a victim mentality. Paul had to address some issues and things that were going on in the church, and apparently he sent a letter to them that probably sat between 1st and 2nd Corinthians, and maybe it wasn't quite as inspired as the rest of the scripture because we don't get to read it. But I think it was pretty strong. And so when he's writing to them again, they are not receiving what he's got to say because they're saying, oh, Paul, you heard us. Actually, we would love to listen, but we can't get over that letter that you sent us. And I'm sure being Paul, that letter was truth, but it wasn't received in such a way that they actually brought about change. It sort of, they recoiled from us. And they would say things like, well, Paul, you're controlling us. You're restricting us. Have you ever heard that said? And he writes to them, 2 Corinthians 6, 12 and 13. And he says, one version says, dear, dear Corinthians. And he's expressing sort of, you know, his heart towards them. But there's also a sense of, goodness me, I'm, I can't believe where all this has got to. He says, the smallness that you feel comes from within you. Here he goes. Here's some truth. Receive this truth. He says, your lives are not small. And I want to say this morning, no matter what you're feeling at the moment, your life is not small. Your life is big. Your life matters. You were created to make a difference. Your lives are not small, but you are living them in a small way. And then he goes, open up your lives, live expansively. And as I was looking at this message this week and doing a bit of research, I had a look at what the King James Version says of verse 19. And I just had to read it to you. And it says, ye are not straitened in us, but you are straitened in your own bowels. In other words, you become so small that you are constipated. Input, no output, you've got a problem. And so often that's what happens. Our lives become small because we're sort of, feed me. I want the best preaching. I want the latest sermon. I want this. I want love. Yes, you should get all that. But if you do not have output, you'll become constipated and you will have a problem. Let's decide we're going to live lives and spacious lives that allow God to enlarge our capacity, that we're going to walk through challenges. We're going to deal with stress that is part of living called by God and living a purposeful life in a complicated world. I reckon if your life is not too big for you, you're living the wrong life. If your life is not too big for you, you're living the wrong life. Your life is not small. If your vision is not too big for you, then you have the wrong vision. If we can't feel the weight of the burdens that we carry, then perhaps we don't have enough burdens. Whoa, that hurts a bit more, doesn't it? Jesus wants to make your life so big that there is room for him. The problem is sometimes in making our lives safe, we become contained and we live a life where there is no room for God. Where he actually wants to make our lives so large that there is room for him, because he's a big God. He's unlimited. He actually wants your life to have room for him. He actually wants you to be having a vision and a dream where there is no way it can come to pass unless God is involved, and then there is room for him. He wants your dreams and the people that you're believing for and the change that you want to see in Hobart and across the globe to be so big that there is no way it can happen without a mighty move of God. God is huge. If we make our lives small, there's no room for him to work. Now, some of you don't have this problem, but I am constantly reminded that I'm not smart enough. I'm not talented enough. I'm not patient enough. And I'm pleased about that, Ali. Because that leaves room for God to work. In leading the church in this season, I'm always reminded I'm not talented enough. I'm not smart enough. I don't know all the answers. Thankfully, we've got a great team where we've pulled all sorts of talents and professional skills and resources and things like that. And then we've got a God factor. You know, the God factor in arriving in this building was when I rang up, the real estate guy rang me, and I said, well, what's the magic number? And he said, $9 million. The God factor is that here we are and we own all this, all that, and all that, and we got it for $3 million. That is the God factor. He wants your life, our life, to be big, so big that we need him to live that life. Why is that? Is this just sort of, you know, modern Pentecostal big life preaching? This world, in case you haven't noticed, has big problems. Our city's got big problems. And they are actually too big for us to live small lives. What's actually happening here in Hobart is too big for us to live small lives. You know, for years, I've seen the holes that we have in people that come into become homeless and have situations like that. And particularly over the years, I've sort of had people that I've been involved with trying to find them a place and work through that. And yeah, there are reasons why they land where they are and all that. But, you know, that's not the point. There are reasons why we landed where we are, but it didn't stop Jesus going to the cross. And then you start to look at it and the problems are big. Oh yeah, this person, they've got this and this and this, and God loves them, but perhaps it's not appropriate to bring them into my home or this or that. And you're thinking, what do I do? And we start to realize that ultimately it's a complicated problem, but ultimately it's a capacity problem. You see, as God enlarges our capacity grows so we can respond to some of these things and come up with solutions and answers, and we can include those things in our world. Dear Corinthians, as Paul said, I can't tell you how much I long for you to enter this wide open, spacious life. We didn't fence you in. The smallness that you feel comes from within you. Your lives aren't small, but you're living them in a small way. I'm speaking as plainly as I can, and he certainly was in the King James. I speak with great affection. Open up your lives. Live openly and expansively. All right, to live a big spirited life. I think number one, we've actually just got to ask God to increase our capacity. So often we're, Lord, take this away. And Jesus himself, in the hardest few hours of his journey in this world, here he is, takes his three closest mates with him, and he says, look, this is tougher than you guys can even imagine. I want you to be with me. I want you to stand with me. I want you to pray with me. I want to know I've got your support. And you know the story, they're wrung out. It had been an intense period, and they go to sleep. There he is alone before his father. And he says what we all go through. He says, Father, would you take this cup from me? Right now, I don't think I have capacity to carry what I've been asked to carry. And in that moment, in those minutes or hours that are after that, he obviously didn't leave it there, but it was like, but your will be done, and I know that you will increase and work within me, and my capacity will be such that I can carry what you're asking me to carry. As Ali said this morning, she said, there are times you feel like, I don't know if I can even carry this, but the scripture is so true where it says that if he starts something in you, he will see it through to completion. He will enlarge your capacity to carry whatever he's called you to carry. And let's, in those moments, yeah, we're going to scream out to God, say, this is hard. But let's, rather than asking him to take the stuff away, let's ask him to grow our capacity to include and carry. There's a very famous prayer. It's been used sort of very in a popular way in a season, and perhaps sometimes taken a little out of context, but it's the prayer of Jabez, and you read it in 1 Chronicles 4:10, and it says, Jabez cried to God of Israel, saying, Oh, that you would bless me and enlarge my border, that your hand might be with me, and you would keep me from evil so it might not hurt me. And God granted his request. Jabez cried, "Oh Lord, that you would bless me, you would enlarge my border." And you know what? I think our prayer is, "Oh Lord, that, you know, I know that you want to bless me, and I just pray that you would enlarge my capacity." And with an enlarged capacity, actually, you give me the capacity to step into the enlarged borders that you're giving me. You know, there's so much ahead of us as a church at the moment, but what we've got to be praying for is, "Lord, enlarge our capacity so that we can step into what is ahead of us." And like this week, as we lead into Vision Sunday, it's not like, "Oh Lord, give David a more exciting vision." It's like, "Lord, enlarge our capacity as a church so that we can receive what you're calling us to, Lord." All right, to live as a big-spirited person, we've got to ask God to increase, I believe, our compassion. I think compassion is actually quite linked to capacity. Deepening our compassion makes us about others and less about ourselves. The miracle of the 5,000 in Matthew 15, and by now the disciples are starting to work Jesus out a little bit. So they look around and they think, "Hey, we've got a problem here. We've got 5,000 people," or a lot of scholars think that it was a lot more than that because they probably only counted the men. And they thought, they got a bit smarter. They said, "Okay, we sort of know some of the things Jesus might say, but we're going to appeal to his compassion." And so they go to him and they say, "Jesus, you're teaching and you're ministering, and if you hadn't noticed, there's a lot of people here, and it's about to get dark, and they're going to get hungry and cranky, and we could have a riot on our hands. Send them home so they can get food before it happens. You know, we know that you love them and you care for them, so it's time to act now." And Jesus was compassionate. And he says, "You feed them. You feed them." And I think in that moment, that was much more about the disciples than it was about the crowd. What he was saying is you've come to me appealing to my compassion. Well, you start to let your compassion start to develop for these people, and you find a way to address the situation. Because while you're just expecting me to do that, nothing's going to happen. But I want your compassion to actually move. And in that, I think you'll find a way to meet their needs. So he says, "You develop your heart for these people. And if you get a heart for them, you'll find a way and a miracle will follow." And then I think we need to own what we've got. Well, and then he helps them through. He says, "Well, what do we got here?" And you know, they come to him with a few loaves and some fish. And he says, "Okay, well, obviously that's not going to feed the 5,000 people, is it? But that's what you've got. You've owned what you've got. You've come with what you've got." And Jesus took, you see, the miracle didn't actually happen in the hand of Jesus. The disciples were the ones who dispensed the miracle. See, if you read that, you said Jesus took the loaves and fishes, he takes them from them, he prays over them, and he hands them back to them transformed. You know, if we will come to Jesus with an open heart, with what we've got, and we will give it to him, and he will pray into it, and he will give it back to us transformed. When we own what we have, rather than thinking, I could do better if I had a new car, Or if I had a new house, or if I had a greater space. And what we've actually got to do is say, you know what, this little cottage I've got, I give it all to you, Lord, and he hands it back to you transformed, and miracles start to happen in that little cottage. Miracles start to happen in that place. You know, you've got a 1986 clunker. And you know, if I had a better car, I could do this. Well, why don't you just say, Lord, I give it to you, and he hands it back to you transformed. It might just stop using oil. I don't know about that, but... get a heart for people and own what you have. Give it to Jesus and he will give it back to you transformed. As the disciples got compassionate, as they owned what they had, as they gave it all to Jesus, he released them to be miracle workers. What an amazing thing. All right, to live as a big-spirited person, I think we're going to ask God to increase our perception. Have you ever wondered why Jesus taught first before the miracles? You just think about the miracle of Peter's amazing catch when he's fishing. And why didn't Jesus just say to Peter, hey, look, you've been fishing all night, it's not working. You just need to paddle out there a bit and put your net on the other side of the boat and you'll catch some fish. You see, but what actually had happened is Jesus had been standing in Peter's very boat. When we allow Jesus to stand, when we allow the presence of Jesus in our house, our space, our workspace, you know, something actually happens around that. So Jesus is teaching in Peter's very boat. And he's speaking, he's talking about the kingdom. He's actually lifting their eyes and their horizons and helping them get an understanding of who God really is. You see, if Peter hadn't heard the teaching and the words first, his perception of who Jesus is wouldn't have changed to the point that he was able to receive the miracle. Because he says to Jesus, well, we've been fishing all night. We're professional fishermen. We get this. We know that it is not the night to catch fish. But he says, my perception of who you are, Jesus, has just increased. I understand a little bit more about where you're coming from and what you've got. And if you say so, I will go and let down my net again. The teaching expanded Peter's capacity to believe. The teaching expanded Peter's capacity to receive. Teaching actually increases your perception. You know, why do we do a sermon every week when so many of you have been in church lots and lots of times? Some of you are more learned than some of us that stand on here and speak the words. All that is absolutely true. Why do we do that? Why do we do that when you can get all sorts of podcasts from all over the world and you can get the best speakers? You know, because the teaching and the togetherness of this actually increases our perception so that we can receive what God has for us. And I encourage you to engage with teaching, not just here, you know, in our church. Get into the good podcast. Get into reading your word. Get into studying. Get into understanding. And your perception will increase. And with your perception increasing, so will your capacity to believe, and miracles will start to take place. Miracles came into their lives once they understood. Peter's faith increased because his capacity and understanding increased. All right, to be a big-spirited person. Here's something really practical. Develop positive associations and cease negative conversations. Develop positive associations and cease negative conversations. A negative conversation will adversely affect our capacity to increase. We're never motivated by those who are not motivated. We can't share dreams with those who aren't dreamers. To increase our capacity, we need to make sure we hang around people who help fill that capacity. Now, when you are called to minister and reach out, every person that you associate with isn't going to be a capacity stretcher or replenisher. In fact, I read a book really years and years ago. And it was called Restoring Your Spiritual Passion, and in that the author, Gordon somebody or other, he talked about different people that we have in our world, and he talked about the one that sticks in my mind is he taught one of them was called VDPs, very draining people. Now, you can actually pray, Lord, take the very draining people away from my world. Or you can pray, Lord, increase my capacity. And then he talked about some other people he called, you know, VIPs. Very important people. Not important because they're important. Well, that's probably a better one. Very inspiring people. But we just need to make sure we have those people developed in our world too. And we've got to have a balance. Because if our output is greater than our import, we find ourselves very depleted. So yeah, we're called to minister, and when we're ministering, there are going to be people that drain us. You'll also find yourself ministering to people that inspire you. You'll also find yourself ministering to people that are in hard places and have nothing, and you come away thinking, wow, I am so glad I connected with that person. You know, there is something powerful about giving in that, and they've given back to you. There's all sorts in that. But let's make sure that we develop positive associations. People that actually build us up, people that speak truth, people that they're not always saying what you want to hear, but they're actually speaking truth into your life. They're speaking encouragement in your life. But they might be saying, well, I don't know what we're going to do here. I don't know what's going to happen. Yeah, that's been tough in your world, but let's go back to Jesus and see what he can do in that situation. Let's take this crap that's going on and let's give it all back to Jesus. And Matt, perhaps he'll give it back to us transformed. You know, we need to develop those sort of associations. Positive associations will dramatically increase our capacity for success. Make it your business to learn from people who have been where you want to go.